Okay, let's get into this. We walk around with this huge assumption that if we use a simple word, something common like, success or rest, that everyone else has the exact same picture in their head.
The same file attached to it.
Exactly. But, when you're trying to move fast in life, you just run straight into conflict, into confusion. And it's because that simple word, it actually holds an entire world of experience for each person.
And that's where everything breaks down. That difference, that misalignment is the root of so much frustration. It's why two people can look at the exact same thing and see something completely different.
So that's our mission in this deep dive.
Right. We want to unpack this idea called embodied semantics. The goal here is to give you, our listener, a kind of fluency, a way to quickly translate between these different personal worlds and find some shared understanding.
We're going from confusion to hopefully co-creation. And we're going to start with a bit of chaos.
A lot of chaos.
We have this incredible story about a friend who volunteered to DJ an 8-day wedding celebration in Cartagena, Colombia, having never DJed a big party before.
Oh, wow.
And he learned the hard way that the simple word DJ meant about 5 different things to every single person in the room.
And what's so fascinating is that initial ignorance, right? The assumption of, hey, I like music, I can make a playlist. How hard can this be?
Totally. I play music, people dance, job done. But that definition, that whole world, only existed inside his own head.
I mean, that's so relatable.
It is. I had this argument with my partner about what clean means for the kitchen. To me, it means, deep scrubbing. To them, it means the mess is now in a cupboard.
Same word, total breakdown.
Exactly. So our friend goes into this wedding thinking the job is to set a mood, gradually build energy, a slow burn, a vibey atmosphere.
Which is a perfectly valid, embodied definition of what a DJ does.
But the reality on the ground was completely different. There was another DJ there and a lot of guests who had a totally different impression.
For them, DJing meant a house party. It meant high BPMs, constant bangers, keep it LIT.
So you have these two people, both called DJ, operating with completely separate instruction manuals for the same job. The source material calls this the shared fishbowl.
The shared fishbowl is such a perfect image for this. Everyone's looking at the same thing, the DJ booth, the dance floor, but they are seeing it through a completely different lens.
The bride wanted a movie soundtrack. The local guests wanted reggaeton.
And the international guests wanted pool party house music. Meanwhile, the catering staff just wanted some smooth jazz for breakfast.
They're all watching the same DJ, but they're living in totally different realities. And the words they used to ask for what they wanted were identical. Someone would come up and say, hey, you got to play something more. Lit.
Ah, that word, L-I-T. That's the landmine.
It is. Because to the person throwing the party, lit might mean energetic, fun, people smiling, a good social vibe.
But to the guest who's yelling over the music, whose whole body language is screaming frustration, lit means something completely physiological.
Yeah, it means heart rate of 140, sweat dripping, you can't hear yourself think. Same word.
Two totally different worlds packed inside it. And one of those worlds is now angry at the other. The chaos on that dance floor was a perfect example of a semantic gap, a word gap, turning into a real conflict.
So this brings us right to the core of it all.
Yeah.
Embodied semantics.
Exactly. It's this idea that a single word, and we're talking any word, DJ, success, home, it doesn't just hold a dictionary definition. It's more like a container.
A container for what?
For an entire lived experience. The body sensations, the emotions, the memories, all the history that shapes what that word feels like to you.
So if a single word is a whole world, how do we stop just collapsing them? Because that's what we do, right? We hear DJ and we project our entire personal history of what a DJ should be onto that person.
Absolutely. Right. When our friend heard DJ, he wasn't just thinking of a job. He was accessing his world. Clubs he's been to, the feeling of the bass he likes, what his friends told him makes a good DJ.
And that world is almost guaranteed to be different from the other DJ's world, or the bride's world, or that guest demanding high BPMs.
And here's the shift for you, for anyone listening. If you just assume that your definition of support or respect is the universal one,
you're going to be perpetually confused.
Yeah.
And frustrated.
The whole point of embodied semantics is to stop correcting, stop debating the dictionary, and just start asking, help me understand, what does this word mean in your world?
Now I can hear someone thinking, that sounds exhausting. If everyone's world is different, how do we ever connect?
Right. And if you doubt our ability to connect across these gaps, we really need to talk about the musician Bobby McFerrin.
I was so surprised to see this in the sources, the Don't Worry, Be Happy guy. I had no idea he does this. this incredible experiment with his audiences.
He does. He uses the pentatonic scale. He'll stand on stage and sing just two notes of the scale, and then he'll point to a complete stranger in the audience and ask them to sing the third note.
And they're not a musician. They're completely unprepared.
And almost every single time, they get it. They just nail it. They sing the exact right note to complete the pattern.
Wow. They just know the next note. It's like this moment of pure, uncoached harmony.
It proves that we do have these overlapping worlds. We have shared processes. That scale is so deeply ingrained in us, culturally or maybe even biologically, that we collectively know where the music is going.
So harmony is possible. Yeah. But here's the key part that the sources point out.
Yes.
The magic only happens because McFerrin asks. He creates the space for that person to reveal their world, to show what they expect the next note to be.
He doesn't just assume they know it and finish the tune himself. Harmony is achieved by listening for the overlap, not by just assuming it's there.
That's the key. Mm-hmm. So how do we take that elegant, simple moment and turn it into something practical for, you know, conflict at work or at home?
Well, I've got a framework for this, a six-step guide called the Embodied Semantics Practice.
Okay, let's walk through it. What's step one?
Step one is simple. Notice the word.
So just identify the word that seems to be causing the friction. Usually those big loaded ones like success, productivity, support. Let's use rest as an example.
Perfect. So once you've noticed the word, step two is ask the question. And you don't correct them. You don't pull out the dictionary. You use that open McFerrin style approach.
You say, help me understand what rest means in your world.
Exactly. Which leads to step three, listen for the world. And this is the deep part. When they answer, you're not just listening to the words. You're listening for the feelings, the memories, what they're trying to protect.
So if your partner says rest is watching TV, you need to hear what's underneath that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe what they're really reaching for is cognitive disengagement or a memory of feeling safe as a kid.
Right. And once you've truly heard them, you move to step four. Share your world. You reveal your own definition. But, and this is critical, it's not to convince them that you're right.
It's just to provide context.
Yes. So you can say, for me, rest is actually a 4-mile run and then sitting in total silence. You're offering it up as information, not as a demand.
And this is so important because it prevents you from, you know, weaponizing their definition later.
Mm-hmm.
If you know their world of rest is TV, you could use that against them. Oh, you're being lazy again.
But when you share your world too, it creates this mutuality. It says, we're both putting our cards on the table here, which enables step five, find the overlap.
Okay, so now you're looking for where your two worlds intersect.
Exactly. You ask, where do we meet? And you might realize you both really value downtime or cognitive repair. The overlap is the shared value, not the specific method. One of you uses Netflix, the other uses forest bathing, but you both want repair.
And that leads to the final step. Step six, make meaning together.
This is the Bobby McFerrin moment. This is the co-created solution. You build a new, bigger definition of rest that holds both of your worlds.
So maybe Monday night is cognitive disengagement night with the TV.
And Saturday morning is silent repair time for the run. You've blended your two subjective worlds into a new, shared, objective reality. The whole conversation shifts from, why don't you get me, to what can we build together now that I do?
And if we go back to the DJ disaster, you can see this practice playing out. Even if he didn't have the framework, he realized his definition was just one definition.
He stopped insisting his world was the only right one.
He adapted. He actually invited the other DJ into the booth. He learned their high BPM style. He witnessed what DJing meant to that person in that context.
He started sampling different worlds, you could say. He realized his job was to manage all these overlapping realities.
He literally tried on different definitions. He did the house party thing. He did the movie soundtrack vibe.
Yeah.
He even created something called DJ Breakfast with the chefs, playing exactly what they wanted to hear while they cooked.
The goal changed completely for him. It went from what's the right way to DJ to what are all the possible ways to DJ and learning how to shift between them.
And once you see this pattern, you realize these semantic gaps are everywhere. Let's take a common one at work. I'm working hard.
Oh, that's a great one. For one person, working hard might be all about visible hustle. 60-hour weeks, always online. The definition is quantity.
But for their colleague, working hard could be about intense, deep focus for a few hours, followed by rest. Their definition is about quality and output.
And if they don't talk about it, they will just perpetually judge each other based on these hidden, subjective definitions of hard work.
Or how about, I need support?
Yes. For one partner, that could mean, check in with me every day, help me solve this. Support is high engagement.
But for the other, I need support might mean, please leave me totally alone for 48 hours so I can process. Support is space.
And if the first person tries to engage, the second person feels smothered. The attempt to support actually causes damage. It's the word that fails, not the intention.
It all comes down to what the sources call witness in action. Just witnessing that someone else's world is fundamentally different. Not better, not worse.
Yeah.
Just different.
And the fluency, the skill, is making space for that difference instead of trying to collapse it into your way of being right.
So the final synthesis here, the big shift, is moving from my definition is right to asking, how do we come back into harmony?
We get to that McFerrin moment by bringing our different worlds, all the complex, messy meanings behind our simple words into the same room, and then actively looking for those points of overlap.
So here's a final thought for you to chew on this week.
Mm.
Think about the last time you had a conflict with a colleague, a partner, anyone.
Mm-hmm.
What simple common word were you both using? A word like trust or punctuality or even fun. What word were you just assuming meant the same thing to both of you?
And what would happen if you went back and just asked them, what does that word actually mean to you?
Maybe that's where the next note is.